From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. My guest, director Matthew Vaughn, worked with Guy Ritchie as his producer before turning to filmmaking himself. His three movies as director, Layer Cake, Stardust, and his newest, Kick-Ass, are all adaptations. Matthew, first of all, thanks so much for being here.
Pleasure.
How did you find Kick-Ass? How did that get to you?
Jane Goldman, who I wrote the screenplay with, husband's one of the biggest comic book nuts in the world. And he's got a huge collection, and he's very good friends with Mark Miller, who wrote Kick-Ass. At this premiere of Stardust, we met each other, and we got on extremely well. And he said, look, I've got an idea for a comic book, which I think would make a great film. And he pitched it to me, and I said, I'm in. I thought the concept was so strong. And then we met up the next week, and he plotted out every element of the comic book with me. I wrote the script with Jane as he wrote the comic, which is probably pretty unusual. We finished the movie before we finished the comic, as mad as that sounds.
I should ask you to describe the movie a bit for people who haven't had a chance to see it just yet.
The basic premise is it's about a kid who one day asks the question, why does everybody want to be Paris Hilton, but nobody wants to be Spider-Man? He then decides to make a costume and go out and try and make a difference and take being a guardian angel to the next level, and all hell breaks loose because he's sort of a catalyst for some very insane characters who are taking the concept of being a vigilante to the next level.
That's a pretty good summary because I don't want to give too much away. One of the things, though, that you guys did in terms of the adaptation is it's a little more optimistic. I mean, because the last issue of the comic is really kind of heartbreaking, and you moved away from that quite a bit.
Well, as I said, we finished the movie before the last issue of the comic came out, and
yeah, it just recently came out.
Yeah, exactly. So I haven't even read it. As crazy as that sounds, because once I've finished the script, I wasn't interested in the comic anymore. I was like, "This is the movie." Mark had signed off on the script, and I sort of put on tunnel vision at that point and go off and make the film. But there were a few things that Mark and I had discussed where he was taking it, and I was like, Mark, what are you doing? Some of this is a bit strange. And,
thought his version was a bit strange.
Yeah, I don't know. He's very dark and twisted, old Mark Miller. So, I think right now people need a reason to feel good. I like to go to the cinema to be entertained and just to come out, and life feels a bit better after a good movie. And I think a lot of people have got a lot of pressures right now that they need to escape from.
Yeah, they do. And it's like you were saying, I mean, his is definitely, there's almost this kind of weird version, but the British writers who do comics have a much darker sensibility than a lot of the American writers. I mean, you adapt to a Neil Gaiman novel, and his work as a comics writer is incredibly dark, too. And actually, the book Stardust is pretty dark.
Yeah, I mean, Neil is far more whimsical than Mark is, though. I think
he would have to be.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, without saying, so was Genghis Khan, but that's another and that's another story. Yeah, I think in England, it's funny you say that because, you know, even look at Alan Moore and Frank. Is Miller English? No, Frank Miller.
No, he's American. He's the one American of that group. Yeah,
yeah, no, but I imagine he was English for some reason because he's got the same type of voice.
Yes.
I do feel, I don't know. You have to have some. I think Mark and Neil probably had the same sort of experience at school. I imagine they were probably the butt of many a joke.
By the way, it's The Treatment. I'm talking to director Matthew Vaughn. His third film as director is in theaters now, Kick-Ass. I think what's interesting in both these cases, you basically made them both more fairy tale like, because both the novel Stardust and the comic Kick-Ass are a lot grittier. You use the violence in a lot of cases for at the very least for kind of a humorous effect as much as anything else.
That, exactly. I'm not interested in. I'll never do a horror film, or it sort of makes me laugh because a lot of people have said, "Oh, Kick-Ass! It's just so violent. It's just disgusting. How can you do that?" And I say, "Have you seen it?" And they go, "No." I go, okay, go watch the movie, and then after you've watched it, let's have the argument. And 99% of the people that complained about it, once they saw the film, they rang me up and they said, you know what, it made us laugh. I don't understand it. It was violent, but it wasn't really distasteful. You know, it's the same sort of violence as Tom and Jerry in a weird way.
Or also almost the same kind of violence as in fairy tales, and in both cases, and I would say of Stardust and Kick-Ass.
Yeah, well, I love fairy tales, you know, and Stardust is really a fairy tale in every sense of the word, and in the sense that I think some people complained that they thought Stardust got a bit scary, and I was like, what do you think the Brothers Grimm was? It was about, you know, kids love to be scared. Roald Dahl became a huge author because we all, as kids, were reading it going, this is terrifying and dark, but at the same time, magical and fantastic. You know, Star Wars was a really important movie in sort of making me fall in love with films and understanding cinema, and I think that's a fairy tale. Like, it's a very classic fairy tale structure, and I did apply that. I apply what I call the Star Wars theory to every film I make, and more so, I think, in Kick-Ass than anything else. You know, all the different characters of Star Wars you can see in the characters of Kick-Ass.
I would say it's funny you say that, because I didn't quite think Star Wars, but your movies do have a lot of people in them. All of them have tons of characters.
Yeah, I'm terrified of the idea of doing a movie with one major character. There must be like, there's people, you know, I have the opposite effect. The good thing about having lots of characters, a scene or is getting boring or the plot's sagging, or you can just, whoop, let's cut to this guy for a bit. And, you know, it gives you the ultimate freedom to just keep it interesting.
At some point, though, there's one person in these movies, in all three of them, who's incredibly violent. And everybody else will sort of disappear, and that person basically kind of gets his, or in the case of Kick-Ass, her own chance to sort of show exactly what they have to offer as mm-hmm. a violent person.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I think back to that great section of
Layer Cake,
in
the cafe when Morty explodes.
Yes, absolutely.
First scene I ever storyboarded in my life was that scene. And I wanted to figure out a way of shooting it in a POV of having the living daylights smacked out of you.
But
I'm not allowed to swear, am I? Just to make sure.
No, let's stay away from that if we can. But
yeah,
is all more violent because you're concentrating on Morty.
Exactly.
And just that anger is actually a violent statement in and of itself.
Yeah, I wanted it to be intense and see, I actually think it's more irresponsible. A lot of people shoot violence, like the PG-13 way of shooting violence, I think is far worse than the R-rated way, because the way I shoot violence, it's... I like to make sure that a punch looks like it hurts and getting stabbed looks like it really hurts and is not a good idea. And I think sometimes when you see these movies where the fights look like there's no consequences to any of the actions that are happening on screen. So and with Morty, I really wanted that in Layer Cake. I've really thought, let's capture what it's like or what I imagine it's like, because I'm lucky enough so far no one's totally beaten me up to that level. But what I just wanted to make it feel very visceral and horrible, but at the same time be cinematic.
To some extent, Stardust, but very much in Layer Cake and Kick-Ass, is almost a Pandora's box where the protagonist basically sets all the stuff into motion, mm-hmm. not realizing what the repercussions of his actions are going to be.
Yeah, I think it's really important that the hero is a character that you can relate to and imagine that you are in that situation. And I think the moment that is the case, you're in the film and you go on the ride and you feel it. And I think that sometimes Hollywood gets that wrong. And going back to the Star Wars analogy, I know Lucas, I read a biography on Lucas, and he was saying how surprised he was after Star Wars came out that everyone wanted to be Han Solo, but nobody wanted to be Skywalker. But that's the case because everyone thought they could be Skywalker, but who the hell wanted to be him? You want to be the cool guy, which is Han. And that's how I've always took that to heart and always made sure that the lead character is someone you really could believe that you're up there on screen doing it, and then let everybody else have the fun, flashy roles that you can just enjoy.
Yeah, it's fascinating, too, because I guess like Luke Skywalker, the protagonists in your films are all these in some ways, they're kind of innocent, or at least they got this kind of tunnel vision. They can't see what kind of catalyst they are.
Oh, definitely. And that's the fun of the arc, is seeing someone start in A and ending up at Z or Z, so that you can, you know, go on a journey with them. The problem about James Bond, for example, apart from Casino Royale, you meet Bond at the beginning, and he's Bond. At the end, he's Bond. He's learnt nothing. Nothing's changed. He's just saved the world. And that's, you know, I think that's pretty boring to watch.
It's the treatment. My guest is director Matthew Vaughn. His new film as director is Kick-Ass. But Yeah, I guess I found that fascinating too, just that Star Wars is this real taking off point for you, because now that you mentioned it, I can see these things you're talking about. But definitely in the case of Kick-Ass, it just this idea of this guy wanting to do one thing and basically all these other things that he could never have actually predicted happening.
Yeah, I think his character would have been happy finding a cat. That was his goal, just to help people. That's all he knew how to do. But
it's interesting, too, because you're talking about staging violence, and there's got to be a point of view you bring to bear where, you know, you get that visceral impact of the violence, but it's not too off-putting, right?
No, listen, Kick-Ass was all about balance and keeping the tone right. And, you know, all I can do is make a movie that I know I would enjoy. So at the moment, I enjoy pretty big commercial films. So I think I'm lucky enough that my taste is one that the public like. That might change. I might get old and totally out of touch. But I will one day, sadly. But just thinking might, I will. All I can do is I'd literally just I'm always every time I make a you know direct a scene or write a scene or do anything to do with the filmmaking process, I just imagine that I'm sitting in a cinema drinking my Coca-Cola, bag of popcorn with a bunch of people, and what would make them enjoy the moment. So if I'm trying to make them laugh, what would make it funny? If I'm trying to make them scared, what would make them scream? If I make them, what will make them cry? You know, and that's all that's going through my mind. And a friend of mine is he's a pretty big director, and he rang me up after his movie opened, and he's like going, "This critic just said I was just a manipulator. Such a disgusting thing to be told." And I went, "Of course we are. That's all we're doing, manipulating people. By telling them a story, and we're manipulating them to feel emotions. That's a compliment." And he was like, "Really?" And I was like, "Yeah."
Was that always been the case for you, that big commercial movies were kind of the thing that you were attracted to most?
Yeah, but also remember, I was lucky enough, if you want to start talking about age, to be born in a time where the big commercial movies were good. So, yes, I want to go back to those. I mean, if you look at the big commercial movies of the 70s and the early 80s, they are fantastic, you know, some of them. So, Jaws was a commercial movie.
Sure. And so was Mad Max, for that matter.
Mad Max, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I still think that's, for me, a perfect piece of filmmaking. Indiana Jones, they were great. Star Wars, they were, you know, these were films that stood up and hadn't been tampered with too much. But also the big epic, like The Godfathers, they were pretty big epic movies. And if you go back further in time, like Lawrence of Arabia, that's a, you know, they were big commercial movies, but they're perfect.
You were talking about arc. What's obviously really important for you in terms of shaping film is to give your protagonists all those different emotions. So they're not just stoic heroes. They're actually feeling this stuff almost as an audience surrogate.
Exactly. It's like I remember Deer Hunter.
Sure.
After you've watched them getting married, you feel like you were there at the wedding and that they're your friends and stuff. So when they're playing Russian roulette, you're just on the edge of your seat. Now, if they started them like the modern way of doing Deer Hunter, they had to start, bang, let's do the Russian roulette scene. And you would have thought, oh, that's horrible and disgusting, but you wouldn't be as emotionally attached to the characters. That's what made it so powerful.
We'll take a break and come back to talk more with my guest, Matthew Vaughn. His new film as director is Kick-Ass. I'm Elvis Mitchell. There's more to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest is director Matthew Vaughn. His third film as director is in theaters now, Kick-Ass. I wonder if that's something you since you mentioned that, that's kind of key to you, too, to sort of give this story time to build. So as you're saying, the audience does get to know that person that we're going to be watching for a couple of hours.
100%. I absolutely hate the fact there's hardly any character development anymore. And this need, it's sort of this instant gratification, sort of MTV style, we have to give it everything up front, immediately, is wrong. And I think it's much better that a movie starts slow and ends on a huge explosion than the other way around, because you're just bored and disappointed once, you know, if you start at 10 out of 10, you've got nowhere to go. And it's one of the arguments I did have with the studios when they saw the first cut of Kick-Ass when we were trying to sell it. And they were like, can't you start with a hit girl scene getting shot? I was like, well, I could, but why? Oh, because once that happens, we're in the movie. I was like, well, what? Because we actually spent 12 minutes getting to know our lead character? Yeah, just get rid of it. I was like, no, I'm not getting rid of it. You've got to set his world up so that when he leaves the world, it's more exciting.
Did you basically finance the movie yourself and take it around to show rather than get studio financing for it?
Yeah, every studio turned it down. We couldn't raise a penny in Hollywood. So, and I just believed in the script so much and the project. I said, let's just go off and make it without them.
Really? Nobody was interested at all in this?
We got very, very strong no in unison. It was pretty impressive for Hollywood to actually have such a strong, clear opinion.
As you were talking about this, you reminded me of something that Robert Towne, the writer of Chinatown and many other films, once said. He said in the 70s you had 10 minutes to get the audience's attention. And so you could do what you wanted in that time. But by the time that 10 minutes was up, they had to know why they were there. And movies have changed from that.
That's why I still think the 70s, for me, is, I think, the highlight of cinema. Listen, I'm going to say this, I'm a director, but I really think filmmaking is a director's medium. And now it's going to get back to that because, you know, the Hollywood has to start making films cheaper. And the best way to make a film cheaply is to give it to a director who knows what he's doing and not interfere. And because, you know, most of the movies go out, you know, over budget because the executives change their mind or want something else. And then it costs a fortune to implement their flippant decisions, which are made in a boardroom. You know, also, you know, people used to only watch movies in the cinema, so they weren't going to go anywhere anyway. They, you know, what else are they going to do? They couldn't, you know, now people with DVDs and satellite television and all the stuff, you can just keep flicking between, you know, that's why you need to keep people's attention because they're gone. And I think that's a shame. I think actually life would be much better if people learned how to concentrate again. I think ADD is a modern disease that's not great.
What you're talking about is this fear from the studios that if they don't do something right away, then people will be bored rather than assuming that people will pay attention. Because in these great films you're talking about, people still watch them over and over again for the reasons that we're talking about.
Well, that's what's hysterical. Like a lot of people in Hollywood, I shouldn't slag them off all the time, but I seem to. they all, when they watch Let, they go, God, this is so stylish. We've got to figure out how you shot this film and what did you do? And I said, just watch some great thrillers from the 70s. That's all I did. I just told a story instead of relying on sort of technique and style over substance.
Because there have been certainly stories floating about that you were going to direct, for example, X-Men 3 or the studio movies, and you chose not to.
I did. I walked off.
Because?
X-Men 3 is quite a complicated, long answer, but I'll try and do a condensed one. Is number one, I had a realization very quickly that I was a very, very tiny cog in a big machine and I was pretty irrelevant to the whole process. And what I got terrified of was if the film was a disaster, I'd get the blame for it. But if the film was a huge hit, I would have got no credit for it whatsoever and it wouldn't really have done anything for my career. And I just really just thought, you know, after doing Layer Cake, I was so proud of that film. It was the film I wanted to make. I thought, look, I want to be the director that when people see my name on a movie, they know that they're going to get a film with some sense of integrity and a purpose. I stopped being a producer and I became a director. And I didn't want to be a director with producer's values. And I think doing X-Men 3, it's just like being a glorified producer in a weird way.
Yeah, it's a joke that one director made that said legally a film has to have a director on it. And in some cases, it could be almost anybody.
That's what I was feeling on X-Men. I just felt like I was a tiny cog, which if I was removed, the machine would keep working, no problem. So I thought, they don't need me. They need a director who doesn't care.
It's the treatment. The director who does care I'm talking to is Matthew Vaughn. His new film as director is Kick-Ass. But you said something interesting, that you decided to become a director. What took so long for that?
I have no idea. I had no aspirations to be a director. So
really?
Yeah. I had no aspiration. I wanted to be in the music business. So I had no aspiration. I fell into the film business purely because I was working at the Hard Rock Cafe and as a busboy in LA, and found out that everybody was in the, well, they said they're in the, they're all waiters and stuff, but they were in, wanted to be in the film industry, so they, you know, they all want to be actresses, producers, directors, writers. I wanted to be a rock star, but it wasn't going to happen. And then I suddenly realized why I love films, and these guys were all so serious about having a career out of it that I was in LA, and I met so many people trying to do what I thought looked like a lot of fun. And then I sort of analyzed what I could be in the film business, and I realized being a producer, you didn't have to have really any talent or qualifications. So I decided to be a producer and was pretty good at it. And then Layer Cake, Guy was meant to direct Layer Cake, and then we finished the script, and he decided he didn't want to, and he said, who are you going to hire? And I was making my lists, and then JJ turned around to me and said, why are you going to hire some other guy who's going to screw this up? You've worked in, with me on this script for a year. You know it inside out. And he saw me working on Mean Machine, where I was basically telling the director half the time where to put the camera and sort of who to cast, and then edited the whole thing with him. And he just said, just do it. And I'm so glad Guy decided not to direct Layer Cake, because I wouldn't be sitting here now if he had.
What was your first day like as a director? Because you talked about storyboarding that shot with Morty. What was the first thing you shot on Layer Cake, and what was that first day like?
The first, I can remember it very crystal clear. First time I looked through a camera on the first day of filming with Daniel, and it was the first time I'd ever done it. And I looked through, and I was like, and I said to everyone, God, this is the first time I've ever seen through a movie camera. It's pretty cool. And there was just a horrible silence of, oh, God, who are we working with? And the first scene we shot didn't get into the film. That's why I remember it so well. We cut it out of the movie. And it was probably, we probably chose it for it. So it was just really... not even getting the, it was a day of learning on set. I'd never worked with a camera before, and it was a pretty boring scene. So we scheduled it right for me just to figure it out. So the first day was me mucking around, and then it was a scene that you guys haven't seen, which was him just walking around and talking in the estate agency.
At what point did you feel like you had this as a director, that you that the film belonged to you as you were shooting? Do you remember when that was?
No, I've no idea. Do you know what? I someone asked me a question today, and I sort of think Layer Cake was like my going to school of making films, and then Stardust was going to college, and now I've just done my post-grad with Kick-Ass. People used to ask me 6 months ago, what did I do? I'd say I'm a producer more than I am a director. Now I feel like I'm a director.
One of the things I think you've got a great knack for is not only getting movie stars, but also getting great actors for movies. And that sounds like something that's a director's province to me.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed casting. I don't know why. And discovering talent, I think, is a really enjoyable process. And it's far more exciting finding an unknown person and just watching them become, you know, turn into a movie star. And they're much easier to work with as well. They appreciate the job. I think Chloe and Aaron are going to be big stars, especially Chloe. Is going to just, she's already popping. She's got the new Scorsese film. That's the girl who plays Hit Girl.
Do you talk about who you are? These are your stars she plays.
Yeah, Chloe plays Hit Girl, and Aaron Johnson, who plays Dave, who's Kick-Ass. And the two of them have got huge careers ahead of them. But it was like when we I remember filming, you know, with Daniel Craig. I was talking to him before Layer Cake, and I was just like, I don't understand why you're not a movie star. And he's like looking at me blankly, going, well, I'm an actor. What are you talking about? And I said, yeah, but you're like Steve McQueen, and the world needs a Steve McQueen again. So I was always confident that after Layer Cake, he'd you know, it was not a surprise to me that he is what he is now.
By the way, it's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest is director Matthew Vaughn. His third film as director is in theaters now, Kick-Ass. There's so many things that stand out in Kick-Ass to me. One is that great sort of climactic battle scene with the piece of Morricone music that just made me laugh out loud. And it just, the movie becomes a spaghetti western. And the other thing, which is just kind of another quote, is Nicolas Cage doing Adam West when he's in his secret identity is Big Daddy. Those are two great sort of big pop culture moments that also fit in the context of the film too.
Yes. I mean, the Adam West thing took me by surprise. On the first day of rehearsals, Nick turns up and I give him, you know, introduce him to Chloe, and she's nervous, the poor girl, because, you know, it's Nick Cage and Aaron Johnson's there. And we start doing the scene, and he starts doing pulls out the Adam West voice. And poor Chloe, you know, she's got no idea who Adam West is, and she's just looking at Nick Cage thinking, he's the worst actor I've ever done a scene with. And she can see that I'm looking a little bit freaked out because I just thought, what? Because it took me about 30 seconds to understand what he was doing, because I was thinking, God, he's lost the plot. He's stressing everything wrong. And then at the end of the scene, he goes, what do you think? He had such a twinkle in his eye. I suddenly realized, oh, my God, he's doing Adam West, of course. And Nick said, what do you think? Should we do it? And I went, you know what? Why not? This movie's about being brave and being bold. So let's do it. And then cut to my editor after the first day of his rushes saying, I don't know what pills you guys were taking on set, but stop it now. Go back, reshoot it. I can't cut this. This is the worst idea. Please, please go back and reshoot it. He has to do it in a normal voice. You guys are nuts. And I was like, well, yes, we are.
Well, I wonder, too, where the idea came. You're talking about cutting to use that piece of music from the Leone movie.
Leone, if you listen to the music he was doing at the time of what all the other scores sounded like, it was, like, revolutionary. You know,
it was John Cage and electric guitar and something you never heard in a Western before.
Yeah, and exactly. And some woman doing some mad operatic swell while at the same time there's a cannon exploding. It's just like, what is this music? And I was talking to my composer saying, can we do something like it? And he was like, do you know what? We have spent 10 years trying to do things like Morricone. We can't. We don't even know how he recorded it. Everything is just magic. You can't replicate it. So decided to use it. I mean, I had four composers on Kick-Ass. And as I said, I wanted to be a rock star. So music is where I really come to life. And I am anal to the note, the instrument, the room we're recording in. I mean, I drive my poor composers nuts. And basically, the problem with Hit Girl is if you look at all of her big action sequences, they've all heavily underlined by music. Because, you know, it's the music is what will make the... I was trying to figure out what will make the audience enjoy the scene and not feel disturbed by the scene. So, hence, like when the first time you see her hacking pieces of people. And
the banana splits.
Yeah, I used the banana splits. But we tried it, first of all, with the real banana splits, Tra-La-La song from the cartoon.
From the old TV show.
But the problem was, it was even sicker. Her doing it to that, it became too much like, that's uncomfortable right now. So, and then I found the Dickies, who were a 70s punk band from L.A., had done a cover of it, and I put it on, and I always describe this movie as being bubblegum punk, and I went, that's what this movie's all about.
What a time. Matthew, thank you so much for doing this.
Well, thank you.
My guest is Matthew Vaughn. His new film as director is Kick-Ass. Our recording engineer, KCRW, Santa Monica's Mario Diaz, with assistance from Paul Ruiz at Argo Studios in New York. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey is the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.